Oh, 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 cheeky monkeys.
Get on with it.
Toppy, toppy. It's
Blackcap.
Hashtag fuck Ennis.
That's magnificent.
Hello, John.
Up and down.
Well done.
Hello, dear listener and viewer, and welcome to A Birdcamp Wonderland. We are an Arsenal podcast, and tonight you're in for a treat. We have three wonderful guests. First of all, it's Sophie. Hello, Sophie.
Hello, mate. How are you?
I'm fat, I'm bald, and I'm mainly on the ground. That's a football
rocking
chart, isn't it?
As per usual. Rocking it as per usual.
We've had a lovely chat about MLS, haven't we, that no one gives a damn about.
No one gives a shit about it. Amazing.
Tell me about your podcast.
You can listen to us on Highbury Squad. Our main power is on Twitter, less so on YouTube. We're old farts that that are embracing new technology. But no, you can join Kevin Campbell, Amanda, and myself on Highbury Squad. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, Acast, you know, the usual bullshit social platforms. So, yeah, that's us.
Yes, and it's all top quality and it's really good information. It's just good. It's good to hear friends having a chat, which is very much what ABW is about, and I'm friends of all of you lot as well, which is why I got you all on here. Secondly, we have Lana. Lana, you don't have your own podcast, but you can pretend you have a podcast if you want and just make something up. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. You know, all things considering the technology. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. So if you had to do a podcast, what would you do a podcast about?
I think that's pretty obvious, isn't it? I wouldn't invite Chris on because he wouldn't stop talking, that's for sure. But it would be about French football, that's for sure.
Or you could do one about your beloved Juventus, and then you could get Jason on. You could just have a 90 minutes of a grown man crying.
He's still crying over Ramsey?
Apparently, yes, it is.
I told him to come over, but he won't listen.
He's not allowed out of the country, not since the last incident. It was awful. You know, we can ask you about Ramsey now. He's been getting on at Juventus later on. Finally, but not last, it's Harry from the Chronicles of Agoon. How are you doing, Harry?
Good, thank you. Pleasure to be on. Thank you for having me.
Good. And,
looking forward to having a chat.
Thanks for not asking me how I am. I've done it twice. I usually don't reply the second time, but as it was Lana, I had to. Tell people about your wonderful podcast, just like the Sophie's one. He said Amanda's one there.
So I do the Chronicles of Agoon podcast, where we talk all things Arsenal. Basically, we get guests on from time to time. We do a fans phone in and various other bits and pieces, so check it out.
It's very good, and we will put all the links to everyone's podcast and Lana's made up podcast. We're going to put that in the links where is it? It's not in the comments below, is it? It's in the blurb below, and we put it on Facebook and all those other places. So go and subscribe and follow these wonderful people on the Twitters. I should get your Twitter information and put it on there as well. Right, first thing we're going to do is talk about the... we could skip this if you want and just not bother. Talk about the Sheffield United game. We'll start off with some calm talk from Sophie, hopefully, because I think Harry isn't a happy man.
Well, here's the issue you have on your show tonight. You've got two Greeks... Okay, and anything can happen when there's one Greek in a room, let alone two Greeks in a room. And usually that's superseded with a lot of passion and all of that jazz. But no, it was a debacle of the highest order. And I tried to be a calm person and a rational person. And I gave Emery a shot, you know, in his first season, because I think everyone in a new job, just like me, just like anyone who takes on a new job, they deserve a 90-day period in an office job to show what you can do. But also managers, I think, are given opportunities to show what they can do. If there's a plan of progress and a roadmap to where you're going, what kind of culture you want to build as a team, as a club. And I think that's why Ferguson kept his job after a year in his first year at Manchester United. He was awful. It was terrible. And I think we've all looked back and said, wow, imagine if United had fired Ferguson after that poor first season. And the same thing with Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool. It's been a huge struggle for him when he first arrived, and he's trying to rebuild a legendary club. And, you know, Brendan Rodgers didn't leave it in tatters, but they lacked what we lack, and that's defence. And a little bit like us, I hope we follow the pattern, but they built from the forward backwards. And it took them, what, 2.5, maybe 3 seasons to get it right. With Klopp, and Alisson and Van Dijk were the missing links, and I think Liverpool showed that investment in the defence. And I don't know if we've shown the same at the centre-back position. I think we've done it with Tierney at left-back. I think we've always believed that Bellerin would come back the same player. I don't think anyone trusts David Luiz. I think Socrates has been getting away with it and being able to get away with it because of this passion that he shows. I hope to see Holding back in the team. So there's a sense of who are we now? What is our culture? Where are we going? This time last year, we went on that amazing run and everybody was behind Emery. But I just can't argue with anyone who points the finger at him and says, what is your identity as a manager? Who are your best players? And when do you intend on picking them? And when you do, will you play them in the right positions? So I think Arsenal fans have every right now to be a bit upset, a bit angry, a bit confused. And part of me inside is thinking, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Emery was an Ivan hire, not a Raul hire. So he's not Raul's guy. And that, to me, allows me to believe in hope that even if he does qualify for the Champions League, is he the right person to lead us into this next era? And you have to have many question marks, from the choices in midfield to how he manages a game. And to lose to a promoted side, yes, you know, away from home, it's tough. But the fact that our away record hasn't really improved in 2.5 years is also unacceptable. That's what cost us a Champions League spot last year, among many other things. But to not be able to improve that, not be able to improve the defence, and to look at the fine margins between him and Wenger, and I'm not saying I'm not rooting for Wenger, but the margins are fine in terms of the improvement. And I think fans have every right to question that right now.
Just look, you mentioned about Klopp there. I was just checking the stats. He came in halfway through the, was it the 14-15 season or the 15-16? I know it says, actually, it's probably 14-15. I know in his first in his first two full seasons, he finished sixth in the league, and then he finished eighth in the league, and then fourth in the league, which I suppose 14-15 was his first half season. And I'm just looking at those seasons. He was losing 9 games a season. Now, Emery this season has only lost 2 games. Correct. Do you think that people need to maybe look at the situation that Klopp, because we seem to be compared to Liverpool quite a lot, because I suppose nobody can be compared to Man City. But when we're compared to Klopp taking over at Liverpool, having to change the entire club round, do you think people are maybe need to look at that and go, well, he didn't. He wasn't playing magnificent football with and getting great results for the first couple of seasons.
But he had an identity and a style and a culture and a belief of what he wanted to build and how he wanted a team to perform. And I think that's the argument with Emery, is that we don't see that and we don't visibly see a path towards that. And I think that's the issue. And Klopp, I think, also has handled players. He manages players differently. And I know you'll get onto the Ozil situation, but it concerns me about Emery's trail with some top-tier players and how he's managed them or mismanaged them. And so for those reasons, I think that, yes, less wins, but it doesn't mean that you've seen an identity or a culture that he's bringing to the table on the pitch that leads you to believe he's the right man for the future.
Very good point, Harry. I was going to come to Lana next, but Lana looks quite calm. You look quite agitated. So go on, Harry. Give him both balance.
So first of all, the Klopp comparison, for me, it shouldn't be made, because as Sophie said, what Klopp did come in, I think he joined in October, if I'm not mistaken. And whilst, you know, there were a lot of issues at Liverpool, there was an identity, there was a style of play. And Klopp just thought, you know what, I'm going to come in and I'm going to play my way. I might not have the players necessarily now to do it, but I'm going to embed that. And he's reaping the rewards from that now. Also, I think in their first season, if I'm not mistaken, in his first season, they beat Chelsea on the road. They beat Manchester City on the road. They got some really, really impressive results. And so there were signs that that was, you know, that pressing style was going to work. My issue with Emery is the identity thing. We've not seen any identity. We've seen countless formations, countless different team selections. And how are you supposed to build on something and improve it when week by week the goalposts are moving and changing and we don't actually know what his style of play is? People drive me mad when they talk about the defence and talk about, you know, centre-backs being injured and things like that. Luiz and Socrates were both brought in under Unai Emery's watch. They're both Unai Emery era players. They weren't there when Arsene Wenger was there. So if they're not good enough, who's accountable for that? You look at the fullbacks. We talk about the fact that Bellerin's been out for so long and Maitland-Niles has been a bit of a problem area for us in certain games, particularly in the Europa League final. Well, at the end of last season, Arsenal went into this transfer window with one right back in the squad, Hector Bellerin, who was out injured. We had two left backs. We had Monreal and Kolasinac. Yet Emery prioritised bringing in another left back rather than filling that hole. So I don't have any sympathy for him there either. There are so many things that do not make sense. His treatment of individual players, and as Sophie said, we'll come on to Ozil later, for me is inexcusable. It makes people not want to play for him, and we've seen that, as Sophie already said, at other clubs as well. We wanted Arsene Wenger gone because we wanted to see an improvement. And in my opinion, there hasn't been an improvement. If anything, I'm going and turning up and watching Arsenal every week, and I'm bored. I'm watching dull football. And if we were playing dull football, but we were seeing the rewards of that defensively, I could say, fine, I get it. But we're not even any better defensively. We're actually worse statistically. So our brand of football has completely gone down the toilet. The results aren't significantly better. And for me, he's a manager that I just haven't warmed to. And I think I took a shitload of abuse midway through last season when I kept saying, where is that identity? Where is that philosophy? Where are we headed? And now people have caught up to it because, and I get it, you know, people wanted to give him the time, wanted to give him a chance. But, you know, for me, these issues were evident very early on, and people just, you shouldn't overlook them just because you want to give him a chance. At the end of the day, we're Arsenal fans, not Unai Emery fans. And I don't have any affiliation or connection to Unai Emery. I couldn't care less if he got sacked tomorrow because all I care about is Arsenal Football Club. And for me, he's not the right man to lead us.
Very true. Just looking at the stats, I mean, he did take over in October 2015, like you say. That from when he took over to the end of that season, he lost 12 games. The final game of the season, he lost to Unai Emery's team in the Europa League final. But like you were saying, Klopp, when you see him, you just want to give him a hug. I bet he smells of like our OG from Canada. I bet he smells of Old Spice and tobacco. Oh, tobacco meat. There's no such thing. And you could see, I always thought when Klopp took over that, don't worry, this is going to work out sooner or later, because you know what he's going to do. You know what he did at Dortmund. You know that he's going to bring that through to what he's doing at Liverpool. And it is going to work out, which is why I said that Klopp's my favourite manager in football, not just because I'm a Dortmund fan, but because everything that he's done. And he's single-minded in what he wants to do. And quite often you're going to look at the players that he's got and you're going to know who he's going to play and what they're going to do, and he's going to stick to it because he knows it's going to win. Much like Wenger used to stick to the same thing all the time with some, usually the best players, occasionally some playing out of position. But if you want to take you to lift your shirt up, put it over your head, Harry, and moonwalk around the room and giving it, I'm right, because it turns out Harry was right all along. People, Lana, what's your thoughts on the whole situation with the Sheffield United game, with what Harry and Sophie said?
Can I just say that I was right from the start?
You were.
I warned everyone before he even came to Arsenal that he was not the right person to take over. No one listened, and everyone said that I was just a Wenger girl and I shouldn't talk. But, I mean, the whole, you know, the points that Harry brought up, the identity issue was a reason why he was sacked at PSG, at Sevilla. I mean, the difference between Arsenal and PSG are that PSG actually won the games and the trophies, but he didn't contribute anything. He didn't offer a specific type of playing style. He was on the outs with so many of the star players. He couldn't handle the big egos. And I think, you know, his falling out with the big players is also the reason why he's now trying to take a stand with Ozil, making a point that, okay, I couldn't win against the big boys at PSG, but I'm going to do it here. And for me, the fact that he wasn't sacked in the summer after choking in the Champions League is just beyond me. He should have been sacked already. And Arsenal should have gone out and brought in a much better coach than Unai Emery is, because he is not good enough to lead that club at all.
So do you think if they did sack him, what do you think would be Emery's next man job as a manager? What is his level? Because he's not going to get an Arsenal and he's not going to get a PSG again, is he?
He can go to Genoa, but apparently that role is vacated by Thiago Motta now.
Thiago Motta of the goalkeeper playing as a midfielder. Is that, has anyone else seen that article that is about him? Where he said he wants to play a 2-7-2 formation?
Yeah, I've seen that.
That can't be real, can it? You just get Zlatan to play for your team and lob it from the halfway line into the goal. You'd end up losing every game. Have you seen that, Lana?
Yeah, I saw it. It's just nonsense. The way of saying 3-4-2 or whatever formation. But yeah, it's Thiago Motta. He's weird. But he did a good job at PSG, so why not? Can't be worse than Emery.
That's so true. Did you see that formation?
Trying to be a trailblazer. Yeah, he's trying to be a trailblazer, isn't he? He's trying to pull he's trying to take total football to another level.
True.
That's total carnage.
And also, who cares where Emery goes next? To be honest with you, yeah. I mean, who cares where he goes next? I mean, like, you know, there's no loyalty to him. He's got no history with the club. I think it would be more, I mean, Wenger leaving was difficult for everybody. That was like the worst breakup in the world. Think about the worst relationship breakup you've ever had. That's what it felt like with Wenger. You felt like you were cheating on him by just wanting him to leave. And yet, you know, what did he do that was so wrong? He did quite a few things in the relationship that were wrong towards the end. But, and I always felt those three FA Cups masked a lot of pain that we were experiencing in Champions and Premier League. But in terms of Unai and where he goes next, I don't think many Arsenal fans will care about that.
The thing is with Unai is that I actually think that at a smaller club where the mentality is not necessarily the same and there's not so much pressure to A, win and B, to play a certain way, I think he can do all right. I think at Sevilla, you know, his league finishes at Sevilla were poor. People forget that. But I think he is pragmatic and he can work at certain clubs, but I just think that a club like Arsenal is too big for him. PSG, the expectation there was too big for him as well, and he simply couldn't cope with it. And the fact that we went and got him,
he can't be a bad manager though, right? If you win, you can't be a bad manager if you win three Europas on the trot and still in France, he still had to win. I mean, you still have to win at the end of the day, and yes, you have star players, but you still have to achieve it and do it. So I don't think we should be too disrespectful of his achievements. I think he's been lucky in some places, yes, but you don't win those trophies back to back to back. As we've seen, it's not easy to win Europa League. So I think you have to credit him for what he's done with what he's had. In my opinion, I just don't think it's easy to win in football. And he's won quite a bit.
You're muted, Lana.
I'm saying the achievements at PSG aren't his. It's Laurent Blanc's.
No, but but he bought it over the line. Laurent Blanc didn't. It's like saying, I built a car.
I think I've never won the league with PSG.
Drives the car. Lewis Hamilton's the one that drives the car and wins the race. To win three Europa Leagues in a row is quite an achievement. I'll give him that. I mean,
sure,
and he still had to manage the egos, even though it ended badly at PSG. He still had to win those trophies.
Not the first season, he didn't. Monaco did.
No, but you still have to, you go. Yes, Monaco did, but he won eventually, and that's a fact. That he still had to go into training every day, train players, prepare for games, and get results, and he did
but
that.
But the bigger picture, that league that season was in shambles. Monaco lost all their players. Lyon had a really bad coach, Marseille as well. I mean, it was expected.
We could say the same year. We could say the same thing when Leicester won. It was a shambles that year, but we didn't capitalize on it. And we're the Arsenal, and Leicester won.
With this software, as it's still in beta phase, you probably noticed this, Harry, that you will overlap. These people aren't talking, these people, Sophie and Alana, aren't talking over each other, but you need to wait a slight, because there's a slight delay with Sophie's. There's always one, we found this, even with just all asked a lot in the UK, there's always a slight delay with one of them. So yeah, that's why there's a slight overlap when you two are speaking. But I think Harry made a good point that when he won all that stuff with Sevilla, when he won the Europa League, you go and have a look at Wikipedia and you go and have a look that when they got to the latter half of the season, their season, their league season fell apart because he only had the squad to do one thing. And also, I agree, Harry, the point that you were making with there's lesser expectations. Also, if he's going to go and manage a club like Sevilla again, he's not going to have star players. He's not going to have an Aubameyang, a Lacazette or an Ozil playing there, is he?
No, absolutely. And someone made a comment made in jest the other day, but it made me laugh, where they said the difference between Unai Emery managing Arsenal and managing Real Vallecano is Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang at the moment, because he is literally dragging us through game by game. It's just, for me, like Sophie said, he's not a bad manager. I'm not saying he's not a good manager. He's okay, but he's not an Arsenal manager, in my opinion. And maybe I'm biased when I say that because I'm an Arsenal fan and I love the club and I know what the club means to so many people, but he just doesn't have that X factor for me. You know, he doesn't have that charisma. I've really struggled to deal with his press conferences, his interviews, and I know that English is in his first language, and I'm not for a second slating him for that, because it is very hard to like, if you told me to go and do a job in Spain, you know, it would take me 10 years before I could string a sentence together. So I've got sympathy for him there, but I just think get an interpreter. And I think that if Unai Emery was able to convey his ideas to the club supporters and the players, of course, but more so the supporters, so we could actually understand what it is that he's trying to do and implement, I think a lot of people would give him a lot less stick. I mean, he was asked in the press conference after the Sheffield United game, a question by Dan from the Islington Gazette. He said to him, do you think you know what your best starting 11 is? And he started talking about corners. Now, is that a language thing or is he trying to deflect? I don't know. But his communication is so bad that the fans are getting frustrated with that. And when you don't know what the manager is trying to say or trying to think or trying to do, it's very difficult to buy into an idea that you don't have any idea what it is.
Lana, to what Harry was saying, how do the other parts of Europe see him? Because you're a fan of the French league. How are they seeing? Do they think, oh, my, how did he go and get a job at Arsenal? And is he living up to the expectations of what they thought that he would do? Because I don't think he's managed to. With the players that he's got, he should be doing a lot better than what he actually is, shouldn't he?
There's no doubt about it. I think that the only reason he got the job was based off of his PSG job. That's literally it. I find it so hard to believe that a club of Arsenal's stature can attract a better manager than Unai Emery. For me, that's just shocking. I mean, everyone wanted someone in to take over for Wenger because, you know, he had lost it and, you know, he wasn't good enough anymore. Fair enough. You know, people hounded him out of the club. And whenever, you know, Emery came in, everyone was like, oh, finally, we have a capable manager. But now all of a sudden, he's not good enough. He was never good enough to begin with. As Harry said, Aubameyang is the reason he's even, you know, in charge at this point. He's, you know, the PSG fans that I talked to, they're like, we warned you. I think pretty much all of League One warned Arsenal fans, but no one listened. And now they're just laughing. Because they're like, yeah, we witnessed Emery for 2 years. We saw what he did, what he didn't do. He's a coward. It's that simple.
But he was hired because we were in Europa League purgatory. And it's been in this vortex of absolute European football dog shite for how many years now? And he has proven that he's a manager that can win that competition. And I think the goal was that he was always going to be a stepping stone, maybe not the future forever, but a manager that could maybe win the Europa League and get us back into the Champions League, knowing that battling for top four is harder than ever. And clearly the club whiffed on Arteta. There was a reason why. And when you look at some of the opportunities we have missed along the way, we could have hired Klopp. We could have got Conte. Could have had Pep. And unfortunately, the decision makers at the club were very different at the time. And I don't think they're going to be afraid to be ruthless this time. And he's already been fired a warning shot that if he doesn't make top four, it won't be acceptable. So I think initially, to be fair to him, and I'm not here to defend Unai in any way, But I think he was hired purely on the basis of maybe winning the Europa League to get us back into Champions League football, because he has the pedigree in that competition.
And up until the final, we looked like we could do it. Chelsea were in a bit of turmoil. We'd had so many amazing games, home and away, beaten some really decent teams in the quarterfinal and the semi-final. So I suppose the question everybody wants to know is, I'll start with Harry, should he go, and who would replace him if he went, say, we lost at the weekend, because we're going to win tomorrow night. But so if we lost at the weekend, who would you have?
In my opinion, should he go? Yes. Like Lana said, I would have let him go at the end of last season. Just quickly before I answer that, going back on that Europa League, him winning three Europa Leagues, I think if I'm not mistaken, if you look back, only in the last season where he won it was a Champions League spot up for grabs for the Europa League winners. So you've got to consider that the tournament wouldn't have been taken as seriously by lots of the big European clubs. Because now it's a route back into the Champions League. It wasn't then. So I think the competition was a little bit of less value back then. Maybe an irrelevant point, but I think that's important when you're talking about him winning stuff in the past.
I think that's snobbery. I think that's snobbery of English fans. I don't think European fans think that at all, and European clubs don't think that at all. That is a stigma of English clubs, because every other league practically takes that competition a little bit more seriously than we do.
Not League One, unless it gets you into the Champions League.
I would say for Serie A as well. Napoli haven't won a trophy in God knows how many years, had opportunities to win that, and they just don't care.
They didn't, because they focused on the league, and in the end, it wouldn't benefit them until the last, Sevilla won the last trophy, and it was open that you could get a Champions League spot. Otherwise, but
I don't think you can dismiss him winning three Europa Leagues on the trot, regardless of whether or not there's a Champions League spot on the line. I think you guys are being a little bit unfair, because you still have to win that competition. You've got to go to the shittiest places sometimes on the universe. Travel is insanely difficult. You play on dog pitches. It's not easy to win. And a lot of teams in Europe do take the competition seriously, especially the teams that he managed. And you can't fault him for what he's achieved. You really can't. I mean, that's
I'm not dismissing it completely. I just think it's worth noting, because Arsenal have been getting to the semi-finals of this competition at least by playing our reserves pretty much all the way through. So it isn't anywhere near the standard of the Champions League. I think that's kind of the point. You know, it is a league below the Champions League. There's no question about that. But sorry, going back to Danny's question, I would let him go. I would have moved him on at the end of last season. At this moment in time, I think it's very difficult to get a top manager mid-season. I would certainly start working on getting someone in, but I'd be happy for Freddie Ljungberg to take the reins at the moment. I've had the pleasure of speaking to Freddie Ljungberg last season. I got to interview him, and you can tell he's someone that really knows his stuff, A, and B, you can see there's a respect for him from the players. I was at a couple of under 23 games, and those games are a bit different because there isn't much of a crowd. You can hear pretty much every word that's exchanged between the coach and the players, especially if you're sitting near the dugout. And you could see the respect and love that those young players have for Freddie Ljungberg. So if we are looking to go down this route of bringing in, the Willocks, the Maitland-Niles, the Sakas, those kind of players, and hoping that they're the future of the club, I think there's not a better person at the moment than Freddie Ljungberg to nurture those players. Of course, his managerial credentials will be in question because we haven't seen him have a proper job yet. When I say proper job, I mean, you know, at the elite level. But I'd give it to him temporarily, and just, you know, we're not going to get anywhere under this manager. So if it means writing off the season just to get him out and start laying the foundations for the next person, then I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and he hasn't done himself any non-favours by that yellow card, because our Fuzz fans, but go on, Freddie, you get some. Lana, do you think he should go at the weekend? If he lost at the weekend, do you think you should go? And who do you think realistically we can get in?
I think it would be stupid to let him go now. I mean, if you were going to let him go, do it in the summer. It would just cause instability for the club and more chaos than evidently it already is, in my opinion. I've said it pretty much from the start. I was surprised that they never went for someone like Jardim. If you ignore the fact that Monaco is not doing so well. Well, they're doing well now, actually. But he would have been a perfect fit for the club because he's the type of manager that would fit in really well with the squad that Arsenal has. I mean, I think he would do really good work with Ozil, especially. And Jardim is a manager that would fit Ozil more than someone like Emery perhaps would. And I think that you would get a defined, you know, style of play. You would get beautiful football, attacking, you know, free flow, much like Wenger ball. And I think the fans would have enjoyed it. I'm not sure they want him now, but I personally don't see who would fit in at the club. I don't think someone like Allegri or Conte would, because it's not, Arsenal's not that kind of club that would be, you know, suited for them, in my opinion.
You're going to say something, Harry?
Yeah, I was just going to say, when people talk about like stability in the middle of a season and stuff, and I think stability, you know, it's important to a degree, but I think if you look at the most successful clubs in world football, there is no stability. And that's why they're at the levels they are, because people are under pressure all of the time. Since Roman Abramovich came to Chelsea, they've won 5 Premier League titles, 5 FA Cups, a Champions League and 2 Europa Leagues. And they've been sacking managers left, right and centre, because when it doesn't work, they don't dwell on it. They move people on quickly and they plan for the next stage. And I know they've had more money to spend, et cetera, et cetera. But I just think that the stability thing, I'm not so bothered about that. We had 22 years of stability and it ended in ruins. So now let's act like a big club and make the changes that need to be made ASAP rather than wasting time. That's just my view on it.
Sophie, do you think that, I was going to ask, mention this point earlier, do you think that that Emery is a little bit of a Spanish Bruce Rioch or a Spanish David Moyes, and it was never really going to be easy for the poor bloke? As well as, would you know, get really interesting. Of Palace?
Yeah, what's really interesting about Emery was when we went on our 22 unbeaten run last season, no one had any question marks. People had question marks towards the end because of some of the performances, for sure. But everyone had this hope and this sense of change that was coming. Managing in the Premier League is not easy. We see managers go very quickly. And Arsenal have not been a sacking club. I mean, they couldn't let go of, they couldn't cut the umbilical Wenger cord for years. And we've suffered because of that. It's destabilized us more so keeping a manager than getting rid of him. It has affected our winning culture. It's affected our identity as a football team. And we've seen ourselves lose our prowess as a Premier League side that was always challenging or always at least, you know, qualifying for the top four. In some ways, the top four became this mistress, you know, on the side. And it became an Achilles heel for the club always, because it was always like, let's just get top four. Let's get top four instead of let's challenge to win the Premier League. Let's challenge to win the Premier League. So I think you need to find a manager who has massive ambition, maybe egotistical in some ways, and someone who's going to be ruthless and not care. One of the things I do appreciate about what Emery's done is sidelining Ozil and showing to him that, I'm sorry, if you do not put in the effort, if you do not show up in training, and if you do not do the things I'm asking you to do, then you will not play. And he was a player that was enabled under Wenger. He was able to do whatever he wanted. So this idea of fitting Ozil into Arsenal, let's just get rid of the issues. It started in the summer and it needs to trickle on. You need to, you got rid of the Jenkinsons. You got rid of these periphery players that were just hanging around and always able to set back in when there was an injury or there was a need. Instead, we need to build a team that can challenge for the Premier League again and eventually get back into the Champions League, but be a force and get to a semi-final again, a quarter-final, build on that. And I think with us, we've just kind of gone through such a period of change that it's going to take a while to get that. And be careful what you wish for. We're kind of seeing a little bit of what's happening at our club that happened at Man United. Mourinho adopted his park the spaceship football, And you Manchester United's flair, pizzazz, wasn't there. Under Wenger, Wenger ball, it's been disastrous in the Premier League for his last, 8 to 10 years. The three FA Cups, as I said before, masked some of that pain. You just need to have a sensible manager that can come in and play to the strengths of the players that he has and then build on his philosophy and bring in the players to play football and challenge. And it's as simple as that. Football isn't rocket science. And I think we make it so difficult as a club. But I believe in these people that are here now. You never know until you hire them.
Okay. When you said the O word, as we should refer to it, I could see steam coming out of Harry's ears. So I think our dear viewers and listeners would love to hear Harry's views and everyone else's views on the Ozil situation. It wasn't something I'd made plans to talk about, but I think it is integral to the whole Emery situation. And I said, I mean, everyone knows my views on Ozil. He's not cutting the mustard, as people say, so get rid of him, don't let him play. But I know that if Ljungberg was to come in, which should be, I wouldn't sack Emery, if anyone's wondering. I wouldn't sack Emery. I'd leave him to the end of the season. But if Ljungberg came in, you know the first thing Ljungberg would do would start Ozil every single game. Harry, tell us about that little discussion that we were having on your Chronicles of Aguna channel. We were in the comments, we were having a little bit of a disagreement.
My issue with the whole Emery thing is that, Ozil thing, sorry, is this. So first of all, I want to make the point that I completely agree that Mesut Ozil hasn't performed to the best of his ability since he joined Arsenal for most of the time. I completely acknowledge that. I accept that he's not the best number 10 in the league anymore. He's not in the level of Kevin De Bruyne or David Silva or anyone like that. And I'm not for a second saying that he's better than those players. What I am saying, though, is that Mesut Ozil is at least good enough to be in Arsenal's 18-man matchday squad. Now, we went to Sheffield United the other night and Joe Willock played in that position. And I know Joe Willock's done okay when he's been in the team this season, but he is a kid. And with kids, you will get inconsistencies. It's the problem that Frank Lampard is going to have over the course of the season. And that's why, you know, Chelsea's form, I believe, is going to be up and down because there are so many young players in there still learning their trade. You cannot rely on these players. You just cannot do that. And to leave Mesut Ozil out simply because he doesn't run as much as everybody else in training is absolute nonsense. There's this mentality, particularly in England, that hard work comes above everything. And it really, really doesn't. Football is not all about who runs the most. It's about playing. That Andrea Pirlo once said, football is played with your brain. Your feet are the tools that you use to play it. Now, football is far more sophisticated than the guy who runs the most is going to win all the time. Mesut Ozil should be put in a team where he is able to have a free role and go ahead and create. Because when he does play, he does more often than not create something. He creates a hell of a lot more than some of the other options we have. If we had Kevin De Bruyne, I'd be telling you, fine, let's get Mesut Ozil out. But we don't have anything better. And that's my argument. So, again, it comes back to that point about Emery's communication. You can't just leave the guy out, say he's fit, but leave him out. And your reason is, oh, there are other players in the squad that deserve to be in there more than he does. Why? Tell us. We're the supporters of the club. We can't back you if we don't know the real story. And the fact that he doesn't want to say the real story makes me feel like he's in the wrong. Mesut Ozil had the opportunity the other day to give an interview to David Ornstein. And if he was the type of player that everybody makes him out to be, he could have been a right arsehole and he could have really thrown Unai Emery under the bus. And he didn't. He didn't. Because obviously, Ozil cares about getting back in this team. People say he doesn't care because of his body language. Who cares about his body language? If he's feeding passes through and putting players through on goal, I couldn't care less if he does nothing else for the remainder of the 90 minutes, because the team should be set up in a way that accommodates that. The real problem is the rest of the balance in the squad. And that's why Emery feels he can't put Ozil in. It just drives me absolutely insane. If we had something better on the table, by all means, get him out. But we don't. And so to leave him out, and then every week we're talking about Arsenal having a lack of creativity, drives me absolutely mad. It really does. I can't get my head around why a manager going into a new job would not, his first port of call should be to go in there like Jurgen Klopp did and put his arm around the best players, get them on his side and use them to their maximum capability. He's not even given Ozil a chance. If you can find me a time where Ozil started more than three games on the trot under Unai Emery, I'd be very surprised.
Football is a team sport, and you have to be able to rely on the players around you in order to be able to play effectively. And there are more than one source that explains the frustration that Emery has with Ozil. And, you know, I know firsthand about, you know, the fact that he is a little bit lazy. And you know what? You don't have lazy players. Ronaldo's not lazy. Top players aren't lazy. You know, why should he be accommodated? There are so many better players out there than him right now. And even someone like Ceballos.
We don't have them.
No, you do. You have someone like Ceballos who could easily slot into his role. You, if not, then you go get them, or you continue to believe in a player like Willock. I'm sorry, it's easy to be a superstar when you play Ludo Goretz. He's never shown up against Man United. He's shown up once against Liverpool in that amazing 3-3 draw. He's never shown up against City. He's shown up against Spurs, what, a couple of times. He just hasn't been consistent. And then he stopped showing up against the teams where we did rely upon him to be able to be a game changer and help us get a kind of result where you require a little bit of that creativity, especially if you're playing a counter-attacking setup. So Ozil, who I respect tremendously as a footballer, also is, I'm going to say something that might be a little controversial, but I've said it on my podcast. There's something about him that is a little fragile mentally. And you have to look at what he's experienced in his life. Kolasinac responded and came back to play, maybe not well, from the carjacking. You could tell that mentally he's different. He was escalated in his recovery from that incident. Mesut Ozil's German experience was completely debilitating for him. He was crushed. His soul was burned. The dude was blamed for a nation's failure. And he also had to endure racist treatment. Now, I've also said on the last podcast, I come from a country that doesn't necessarily endorse Ozil's friendship with Erdogan. And I don't want to get political. But I think he's very convenient. He's very convenient, Ozil. He wants to be who he wants to be when he wants to be it. He doesn't put his team or his teammates first. And it's time for him to go. He is not a game changer anymore. Look at his assist. His assist stats are from when to when. And based on the fact, Harry, that when was the last time he performed well for the team? And yes, his attitude walking off in the Europa League final sucked. There are fans who pay thousands of pounds, dollars to go there. Friends of mine here, all corners of the earth, traveled 2 days. And you want to walk off and behave like that? That matters to fans. It may not matter to you, and it may not be the important thing for you, but his body language, that languid laziness, yes, he shouldn't be punished for it. But at the same time, he has done himself zero favors to illustrate to the squad or the management that he is the player to rely on, because he just hasn't been. And that's a reality. He's a marketability factor that Arsenal have milked for as long as they can. And now they need to find another guy to put their marketing dollars on, because he's not on the pitch anymore and he's too much of a luxury. And it's just not fair. It's not right.
I would agree with most of what you just said if you were consistent about it and said the same things about other players who consistently fail to perform, yet Unai Emery selects them every single week. No, but there are so many players in that squad. So how can I take Unai? How can I believe that Unai Emery?
That wasn't the question, though. The question was about Ozil, not other players. So right, you can't say I'm not being fair.
The point is that you can't, on the one hand, defend Unai Emery's treatment of Mesut Ozil, yet excuse him for selecting some of the other muppets that he puts in the team every week. One of them who he's made our club captain, by the way. The guy's an absolute shambles. And to say that Ozil's not a team player, I guarantee you, if you sat down with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang and said to him, who would you rather was behind you, mate, feeding your passes? Granit Xhaka, Matteo Guendouzi, or Mesut Ozil? They'd all pick Mesut Ozil. His popularity amongst the team is not an issue. His popularity with Emery is a problem. Within that group of players, he's very loved. And you can see that from their social media stuff. He's not a divisive figure in the dressing room. The manager has singled him out.
No, I of course. The same with Pogba and Mourinho. And we all know who won that battle. Player versus manager power. You know, there's a click. There's a little bit of a click with Ozil, Kolasinac, Mustafi. Yeah, of course, Aubameyang scoring without Ozil. I mean, to say what you just said isn't accurate because Oba has been sensational since he's been at the club. And most of his goals that he scored last season were without the help of Mesut Ozil. And Oba and Laka are the ones we should be building the team around. We should be forgetting about the Ozil conversation. It's done. That's why we paid what we paid for him. That's his job. He's supposed to score goals.
Lana, what's your thoughts on Ozil without going political? Because we all know all the shitty stuff that's going on there.
It's hard not to go political because us made Ozil the poster boy of the club. Everything he does on and off the pitch affects the club. So the fact that he's seen with a dictator, I'm sorry to everyone, but the fact that he's seen with a dictator, how does that reflect on the club who has poured millions, pays him $360,000 a week to perform to, you know, assist Aubameyang, when the fact is that it's Lacazette who's assisting Aubameyang and not Ozil. And Lacazette is not a playmaker. I mean, I said it from the start. You should have gotten rid of Ozil this summer. But the fact is no club is willing or is dumb enough to pay that amount of money for him because he's not good enough to make that kind of money. The fact is that Inter wanted him, but only if Arsenal were willing to pay his wages. It says a lot. And I know that Inter are broke and whatever, but still, no club wants him. And that speaks volume. Because if he is as good as everyone claims he is, then why isn't everyone knocking on the door and telling Arsenal, come and, you know, sell him? He's not good enough. It's that simple. And, you know, we bash Emery a lot and say he's not good enough, but I actually admire him for standing his ground on this issue. Because if you're not good enough in training, then you have no issue. You have no business being in the squad. It's that simple. He's not the best number 10, and he hasn't been for ages. Why should he be in the squad if there's players who perform better in training and, you know, show more passion, better attitude? Because that, you know, that matters. It might not matter to, you know, you or me, whoever, but it matters to the fans that pay a lot to come and see him. And the fact that he has such a shitty attitude when he walks off the pitch, it's like, I don't care. Well, fine. Then you can go enjoy the bench or, you know, sit and do whatever you want. For me, who's a Juventus fan, to see someone behave like that, it's just no player at my club would ever be allowed to do that. And if they were, they would be shipped off. It's that simple. And I think that Arsenal have been coddling Ozil for too long. And it's come to a point where it's becoming a laughing stock. And Arsenal should just sell him at this point or, you know, cut their losses. I don't care if money on it, just get rid of him and use that wage on someone who's going to perform.
But doesn't he bring in as more money than they're paying him in wages with his global being a star like that? And as much as I'd like Ozil out the club tomorrow, as much as I don't think he's the player he used to be, I think that in his glory days of Arsenal, he had Theo Walcott, who couldn't score from 6 inches. You got Giroud, who needed 7 or 8 shots on goal to get one on target. He had Sanchez, which was our other jewel in the crown. And when he went, you couldn't just say, well, we're getting rid of our two biggest players. And then I think that if back then Ozil was looking pretty damn good with Giroud, Walcott, Sanchez, if you imagine Ozil pulling the strings behind Aubameyang, Lacazette and Pepe, this would be the ideal time. And I don't like Ozil, but I'm saying, like, I kind of agree with Harry a little bit that maybe he should be given the chance to feed those three. Never has Ozil at Arsenal had more creative players in front of him, players who are going to score on their first shot than he has now. That's why I'd like to see him given a chance. But what do I know?
Unai Emery hasn't actually... So Unai Emery said that his training, you know, his effort wasn't where it needed to be. And then he said, then Ozil gave that interview to Ornstein. And then an hour later in the press conference, Emery came out and said, oh, we've seen an improvement in his training, which was convenient, of course, that as soon as that interview came out, he changed his tune on him. Now, this is nothing to do with Mesut Ozil. The reason he doesn't get selected is because Emery doesn't want to play with a number 10. So why doesn't Unai Emery just come out and say, he doesn't fit into my team tactically. Instead of making up all this nonsense and letting the press run with all these different stories, it all comes back to that point I made earlier. If Unai Emery communicates clearly and properly, fans will back him. But Emery turns around and says that we want to be offensive. That's what he said in his press conference today. We want to be offensive. Why does he keep picking midfields of Torreira, Xhaka and Guendouzi as a trio? Why was Ceballos left out the other night? Sophie, you mentioned him as a potential replacement for Ozil. Why does he keep leaving him out then? The fact is that Emery don't want to play that way. And so he's using the Ozil thing and the other issues that are surrounding Mesut Ozil. And again, I agree, he's not been great since he's been at Arsenal. He's been inconsistent. He's got plenty of faults. And I would swap him for lots of number 10s in the Premier League at the moment. But in comparison to what we've already got, he at least deserves to be in that 18. And based on football, and that's what we're talking about here. I know we've mentioned political stuff. For me, it's nothing to do with that. You know, political views are a completely separate issue to Arsenal Football Club. We're talking about the club we love. And for me, I want to see the best players playing for my club.
So?
I don't want to get into politics, but it was convenient for him to call the racism card when he was treated badly by the German Federation. But people who call the card on him hanging out with a dictator, as Lana said, is unacceptable to him and unfair. And he's being mistreated. I'm sorry. You can't have it both ways. Let's park that to one side. I think Emery is hedging his bets. He's not going to come out and say what he really thinks. Not a lot of managers do that anyway. There aren't too many transparent managers who wear their hearts on their sleeves. A lot of the modern day managers, you know, might be gearing towards that. Pep is always someone that says what he thinks, but still, they hold things close to their chest. And I think the reason why he hasn't come out and called out Ozil completely is because he may need him. We may need him because we may not be able to buy who we want in January. We may come against some injuries. And so I think Emery's playing poker. Is that the smartest thing to do? No. Does it disrupt the fan base? Yes, but I don't think he owes anything to the fans, Harry. He doesn't have to say what he thinks. Does Pep Guardiola or Klopp or Lampard tell everyone week in, week out what they're going to do with the team? And there's a whole thing with Pulisic right now at Chelsea. American fans here are going crazy. Why isn't he playing? Of course they do, because their philosophy has been different. Their revolving managerial door has worked to their advantage because their owner has been different. He's a businessman who made ruthless choices and it worked to their advantage. Manchester United have done nothing since Ferguson left, other than Mourinho in his first season winning the Europa League and the League Cup. But he still won those things. He still got them back to Champions League football. He had that Premier League experience, that know-how. So I think Emery is just holding his cards close to his chest because he's not sure. He's not feeling confident in himself. And I think we're seeing that. And we're seeing that especially in his lack of confidence in choosing his best 11.
But then I can't get behind a manager who is leaving something open just in case. That tells me that he doesn't believe fully and wholeheartedly in what he's doing. And that's reflective in his team selections and in everything else that he does. It's all half-hearted because he doesn't know what he actually wants. So if he doesn't know and he doesn't have a clear philosophy in his mind, how is he supposed to transmit it onto the team and get the maximum out of them? If he is indeed leaving Ozil, like you said, on the side and not completely hanging him out to dry for that reason that he might need to call upon him, then for me, he doesn't really believe that A, Ozil's not good enough, and he doesn't really believe in what he's doing.
Half of him doesn't. I mean, we've seen that at top level with some managers where they sideline players and then they have an incredible resurgence and stuff like that. So, I mean, you see, even with David Beckham, he was told he was finished at Real Madrid, that his career was over. And he came back and he played better and had one of the greatest seasons of his career. I mean, these things happen. And so Emery is definitely playing poker and it's not the optimal situation, but it's really a shame that he doesn't trust his players. He's switching Torreira, who was one of the first players you'd put on our team sheet every week last season. And now Torreira is like, what is happening?
what is our actual best 11? So I think we'd all agree it's going to be Leno in goal, Bellerin right back, Tierney left back, Rob Holding in the middle with plus one other. So, Harry, would your one other be Luiz or would it be Chambers?
Oh, it's a tough one. I think there is a good centre-half in Luiz somewhere, but I think that with Luiz, the best we've seen of him in his career has been as part of a central defensive three. So I think if we were going to play a three, David Luiz would be top because he's got that ability to bring the ball out like a third centre-back often has the licence to do. I don't necessarily think he's great in a two, but I'm not... Callum Chambers is one of those players for me who he does okay in all different positions, but he's not brilliant in one particular position or good enough in one particular position to nail down a permanent place. So I probably just go with Luiz. I think Socrates is a disaster. I said that from the day we signed him. So I'd like to see Holding and Luiz get a little run. I think they're both quite comfortable on the ball and we've seen that Emery wants to play out from the back. So I think that could be key.
Lana, I know you're not really an Arsenal fan, but you do keep an eye on Arsenal. Who would be your... Do you agree with that? That four of those back five, with including the goalkeeper, who would be your other central defender, or would you go for something different?
I agree with Harry regarding David Luiz. He would be really good in a back three because he's more of a clumsy version of Bonucci, if you can say it like that. And God knows I hate Bonucci with all my heart. That snake. But he has some good qualities. we don't need to, highlight how good Bonucci is sometimes. But yeah, I agree with that back four plus the goalkeeper. As long as Lacazette starts, I'm happy.
Go to Harry now. What's going to be the rest of your team then, Harry?
I'd play Torreira in front of the back four. I'd play Granit Xhaka there just because I think that Granit Xhaka has a lot to offer. But what Granit Xhaka can't do is he cannot come to the edge of his own penalty area and receive the ball facing his own goal under pressure. And that is what this system that Unai Emery insists on playing keeps forcing to happen. You keep seeing our centre halves come in wide to make give an option to the goalkeeper, which means whoever the deepest line midfield player is has to drop into that hole and receive the ball. It's like if you think back to that, was it Watford when Socrates passed it straight to the forward and they scored? If you think about that game, if that pass did get to Guendouzi, I mean, he would have been under a shitload of pressure. He had three players around him and we keep putting ourselves in that situation. So I think if we slightly change our way of playing, I'd have Xhaka there. I'd have Mesut Ozil in front of those two. And then I'd have Lacazette through the middle, Aubameyang on one flank, and probably Pepe on the other at the moment.
Now you're back in sync. Give us your starting 11 for most games.
After bitching about him so much, I cannot believe Harry picked Xhaka in his starting 11. I mean, that's unbelievable.
Who else are you going to pick, though, I suppose?
Who else do you pick? I mean, my back four is pretty solid. And Leno in goal, Bellerin holding, Luiz and Tierney. I really do think Socrates needs to be benched. I think he's been very poor, and it pains me to say that as a fellow.
You and Harry agree. That's a shock.
Yeah, but... I think Torreira needs to be played in his natural position. I think we saw the best of him. You know, when you think back at that 4-2 win against Tottenham and the legendary status that he had, that cult status he created with that one moment with that goal, it seems to me unfair mostly on Torreira that he's been played out of position. And again, I think that's where questions should be asked. I think Guendouzi is one of our best players right now. He has hits and misses, but in terms of energy, in terms of immersing himself in a game and being unafraid to take chances and make mistakes, but he makes up for them in so many ways as well. And it seems like as the game goes on in the last 20 minutes, Guendouzi has more energy than anybody and helps drive that that forward line a little bit more as well. But I think the midfield is our biggest pickle because you're always going to pick Pepe, Oba and Laka. Although I will say something controversial right now too, Harry, seeing as you picked Xhaka, I would drop Pepe right now. Don't think he deserves to be in the starting lineup. I think he's shown moments of absolute brilliance and technical ability that is the main reason why we bought him. I don't know what's happened to, he was always a player that was able to play with both of his feet in Liga. I think the pace of the game in the Premier League has been a real shock to his football culture. And I would maybe give, you know, Pepe the chance to come off the bench and be a super sub, get a goal, do something, make a change, score, come on when maybe we need something, because right now it's just not happening. And part of that is because of the way Emery sets up the team. He doesn't have that creative player to feed him the ball. He has to go search for the ball in so many different ways throughout the 90 minutes of a game. And that's not fair on him either. But Guendouzi immerses himself in the game. Saka immerses himself in the game. He finds a way to be involved in the game. And I think Pepe doesn't do that. And so for those reasons, I would maybe bench him. But the midfield, I honestly, for me, Guendouzi and Torreira are in there. Whoever that third player is up for grabs. I think it's a new buy. I wouldn't spend millions on Ceballos right now. Would you? Would you guys buy Ceballos? On what? Based on what?
For Spain, he's been playing out on the left, and Spain have been doing brilliant, and he's been doing brilliant.
Spain is set up in. You can't compare.
It doesn't automatically translate, but no, he is doing well there. But so often we'll see Torreira come on, and I think Emery's excuse or reason was he wants someone to go further up the field to break up play and get the ball off them, because he's very good at getting the ball off of people. And Ceballos, he's had two brilliant games for us. He's had a couple of bad games, and the rest of them have been, I think he's moved around too much. Players like to play in a position that they want to play in, and he's not been asked to do it. But your point about Pepe has played, I think, 11 out of our 12 games this season. He's had some part of it. And usually when a new player comes to a new team in a new league, they don't start every single game. And that's what he's been doing. I think because we've got so many other players that can play on that right-hand side, or even play with two up front. Imagine if we had two up front, someone like an Ozil or a Ceballos playing behind those two, and then pack the midfield, then we wouldn't have to have Guendouzi running around like a headless chicken. I love Guendouzi. He's magnificent. But you are asking him to do absolutely every single job in midfield. Come back, like Harry was saying, Xhaka can't play the ball out from the back too. They're asking him to come and get the ball and then pass it up to himself on the left wing and then cross it into himself in the box. He's not going to be able to do any of that. It's just so much. And it's going to start taking its toll on him, because last season, no one expected Guendouzi to come in and play all these games. Even Chris, the biggest Guendouzi lover there is, he said he didn't expect him to come in until Christmas. And remember what we did with Cesc. When Cesc started breaking through to the first team, he was playing every single game, every minute of all the time. And it ends up taking their toll on him, doesn't it? Oh, Lana. What are you laughing at, Lana?
I'm sorry, Memphis Depay just scored. Oh. If I make faces, it's not because of you guys, but Memphis Depay missed two clear-cut chances. So I screamed internally, but now he scored. I hate him so much because he's so effing useless at times. I'm sorry. But can I just chip
in? Is that for Leon?
The Pepe.
Yeah, you can. Thing?
I love Pepe, as yes. You guys might not know. I'm a huge League One fan. Just sort of putting it out there. He started so many games, which is really shocking. Because if you look at Lacazette, when he came in, he would always be taken off at the 60 minutes. Because, yeah, it is a shock to the, you know, body. I think Lacazette mentioned that after his first season, how intense, how more physical it is in the Premier League. And players get away with much more. Compared to in League One, where it's actually good officials sometimes. But I think also that Pepe was unlucky because Lacazette got injured. Because I don't know if you guys noticed, they have a really good chemistry. And I always said from the start that Lacazette being out was a huge blow for Pepe. And I think with him coming back into the squad, that he will benefit from it. And, you know, playing Lacazette behind Pepe and Aubameyang wouldn't be such a bad idea either, because, as you know, Lacazette can create chances. He can drop deep, get the ball in midfield, and he can defend. He can, you know, do pretty much everything. And it wouldn't be such a bad idea to play him behind those two because he's so good at it. Mostly because when Fekir got injured, he had to, you know, just change his whole type of, you know, how he plays, become more versatile. So, you know,
play Lacazette as a 10 wouldn't be such a bad idea if, you know, he's not going to play Ozil and you need that creativity because Lacazette can offer it.
So what would be your, I know you're not an Arsenal fan, but it's always good to get a third party opinion on their team. I know you do keep an eye on them. What would be your, do you think would be our best starting 11? You agree with the back five?
Yeah. Midfield, I like Xhaka. I think he gets a lot of stick, but I think it, as much as it has to do with his mistake, it also has to do a lot with the system. And I think just overall, when you're so low on confidence, it just gets to you. And I think it affects the whole team. But unfortunately, he gets a lot of the stick because he's such an easy target. But I like Xhaka a lot. I would have started him. Not sure who I would have started else. Well, Torreira, Guendouzi, and, you know, have the front three with Lacazette behind those two. If you have to play Aubameyang, you know, through the middle or more centrally, I suppose.
Isn't it amazing that nine of our starting 11 are so obvious of who we should pick and what position they should pick in, but yet we've spent 20 minutes talking about it. I did have a whole list of other things that we were going to talk about, but I think the things that people, Arsenal fans, want to listen to at the moment is talk about the Sheffield United game, Ozil, Emery and lineups. I think we've covered most of it there. Right, I'm going to move on to listeners' questions now. The first one is going to go to you, Sophie, from Alonso Spencer in the good old US of A. He says, at what point does Emery take a chance to play Bellerin, Chambers, Holding, Tierney at the back? And why doesn't he fix the problems that he caught that cause his team to lose or draw? Basically, why doesn't he take risks as far as changing lineups?
He's not a risk taker. He's a safe player. I don't understand why Tierney didn't play on Monday. Tierney is ready to play. Bellerin might not be, to be fair. Bellerin, his trajectory and his injury is far more serious than Tierney. And I am very happy to see that we're managing Bellerin in the right way and we're not rushing him back. I think a couple more cup games, the Europa League game tomorrow, I think will help him. But we should be starting Holding. You know, I had the wonderful opportunity of talking to Arsene Wenger about Rob Holding. I think it was 3 years ago now.
Yeah, I saw it on your YouTube.
Yeah.
I watched it last night.
There was something about Holding I saw on that preseason tour, you guys. And I was like, who is this kid? And why is he yelling at everyone? Like senior players, like proper in training, acting like they were playing in an FA Cup final or in a game to qualify for top four. I was so impressed with Holding and his passion, but also his assertiveness and his clinical behavior on the pitch and how he was dictating lines and also not being afraid to point the finger at players that were far more senior than him. And I think he's somebody who is captain material because I've seen that behavior in him firsthand. So for me, I just don't understand why we can't see that part yet. I'd drop Socrates, I'd play Holding, I'd give Luis another chance just because of what he's won and his mentality, and he's been there so much more than Socrates. I mean, I'm sure Socrates is one in a kebab shop every now and again. Tierney, for me, is a really exciting crosser of the ball, which is something we're lacking right now. Kolasinac's delivery has been so poor. It's been bad. He needs to be starting before him. So in a nutshell, I don't know why he should. And absolutely yes, if any of that makes sense.
On last night's Same Old Arsenal podcast, Harry said that the reason why Kolasinac played is because he hadn't done anything wrong to be dropped. So why has Ashley Maitland-Niles been dropped? Hey, Harry.
Harry just contradicted himself again because earlier in the podcast he's like, "How can you say Ozil?"
And no.
Crap players that's, like Xhaka and then Xhaka and his team.
That's not what I said. That's not what I said last night. I said that Emery suggested before the game. Yeah, Emery said it. Yeah, not me. I don't think that Kolasinac deserves to start.
Maybe I didn't mumble out that Harry said that Emery said. Sorry about that. I've caused grief. Accidentally, there's more
Chinese whispers.
Okay, right. Next question is going to go to Harry. It's going to be from Josh Robinson. He says, 2 points. One, Guendouzi needs to be dropped. He does nothing that is productive. A glorified El Neni who just passes sideways. And then number two, Kolasinac is missing Iwobi. I've hardly seen him make any overlapping runs like he used to. We have no threat down the left, no partnership. Do you agree, Harry?
Starting with the Kolasinac point, I think that where Kolasinac and Iwobi work well together is because Iwobi was always so keen to drift inside, because obviously he was a right-footed player playing on the left. His natural instinct would be to receive the ball and drive infield, which then creates a channel for the left back and more space for the left back to get forward. So I don't necessarily think that Arsenal miss Alex Iwobi, but I take that point that Iwobi's movement would create more space for someone like Kolasinac or anyone playing in that left wing back sort of role. So I guess that's the point he's trying to make. In terms of Guendouzi, there's no question that the guy's got lots and lots of talent, lots of passion, lots of fight. He really cares. There are still some immaturities in his game, though, which is understandable given he's not that experienced and he's still relatively young. So I'm not having a go at him, but just some of the things that I see are that I think at times, and this probably sounds silly, but he overpresses in the sense that he gets sucked into situations that he probably shouldn't do in wider areas of the pitch. And if he just was a little bit more disciplined at times and sat alongside the other holding midfield player, Arsenal would be a lot more of a stronger defensive unit within the width of their penalty area, which I think Lana will tell you, Juventus, when they lose the ball, the first thing they do is tuck in to within the width of their penalty area and they defend their box. That's how you defend properly. I don't know if she's pulling a face at me or something's happened. But I do think there are some immaturities. That's all right. So there are some immaturities there. The other thing that annoys me that Guendouzi does quite often is when he does get fouled and the play goes on, he tends to roll around a little bit, make a meal out of it. And I just think, like, just get on up and get on with it. He seems at times too concerned by the gamesmanship side of football rather than getting on with the game. And again, he'll learn from that and he'll grow and he'll get better, I'm sure. And it's not a criticism. I really like Matteo Guendouzi, but there are still some things that he needs to work on, just like any player.
Talking of ex-Arsenal players, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain scored a couple of goals for Liverpool tonight. Actually, he scored two at 3-0. Hasn't shown me the third goal scorer yet. Yeah, I agree with you there, Harry. Sadio Mane. Ah, okay, good. Right, Lana, question for you. There's two questions for you. One's a little bit cheeky because it's about someone we all know and love. El Comandante says, hey all, are the club lining up AFC Freddy A as manager? Not sure if we'd be able to afford his wages and lure him away from the Barbican Pirates, though. So are we going to get him as manager, Lana?
You know, if he is put in charge of Arsenal, he's just going to fill it with every single French player.
There'd be no players left in Ligue 1.
There's plenty left. Haven't you seen the Lyon Academy?
No, he'll take them all. There'll be none left.
He'll drive a hard bargain with Aulas, that's for sure.
He will do. Right, a proper question from our Ginger Joss with the translucent legs. He says, can you see any reason for the different mentalities, play styles between the league and the Europa League?
Because of the level, I would assume, because of the, you know, the level is lower in the Europa League than in the Premier League. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. Not to bash Emery, but it's more of a smaller club competition. I'm trying to, you know, use words that won't offend Arsenal fans or Arsenal because they're in the competition, but hey, Juve was in it as well. So, you know, I'm offending myself in the process. But it's more of a small club tournament more rather than, you know, the big clubs like Bayern Munich, Real Madrid, Manchester United, Juventus, compared to half of the clubs that are in the competition now. And I don't even know half of them. They're from places I've never heard of.
I swear some of them are made up. They're not real places.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Like, I had to Google two of the clubs because I was like, there's no way in hell that this is a club. Like, this is made up stuff. Chris probably put it in just to mess with my head. But I think it's because, you know,
we talk so well, you know, outside Premier League, a lot of fans always complain how, you know, everyone says that the Premier League is the best in the world, but it's not, because La Liga is. But the competition and the level of intensity is still so much higher, and it makes perfect sense for Arsenal to be more comfortable in such a tournament compared to the Premier League, where they're more challenged and, you know, backs against the wall compared to where farmers in Europa League are basically just huffing the ball left and right. So it's a good competition for youth players, you know, coming through, you know, some of the young players. It would be, you know, it makes sense for Ozil to play in it. I don't know why he doesn't, because it's, you know, it's his level now, basically.
Oh, it's so funny, isn't it? It's so funny how, you know, Tottenham win 5-0 against their opponents yesterday, who, let's face it, there are a lot of teams in Champions League football has been diluted a little bit. There's some dross in those groups. Arsenal beat Standard Liège 4-0, smashed them at home, and we're in the shit tournament, the shit league, which, of course, we all know Europa League is not Champions League. But Champions League only gets relevant and exciting into the latter stages of the group stages and then the last 16. It has become a tournament of a little bit of dross, even at this stage. You get some great matchups, but it's so funny how the perspective of Arsenal now, the dartboard that we've become, the narrative that is built around our club, we're damned if we do, we're damned if we don't. And then you kind of see the shiny new toy across the street and the blue side of North London, who have been absolutely diabolical. Their away record is as bad as ours has been. They've scraped themselves back into the Champions League because we and a weak Man United allowed that to happen. And this is who we've become as a club. People like you pointing the finger at us.
Okay.
I'm not pointing, by the way. I hope that's, like, I didn't mean Arsenal.
No,
I mean,
it's a figure of speech. It's a figure of speech.
You did say Juventus were there as well.
Your comments are valid. Yeah. But this is who we've become. This is what's happened to us.
But
we found, you know, our level.
At some point, you have to have the balls. I would say it's, you know, the United's, the Chelsea, like, they've all been there. Now the task is to climb out of that dark hole and get back into, you know, creme de la creme. And you should have done that last season. But
we should have. United could be more forgiven, though. Manchester United have way overachieved. They can be forgiven. Yeah. Their fall has been so much greater because they were the team. They're the most bankable team in England for the last 22 years. So their fall from grace, they've hit it hard. I mean, it's bad. If you're a United fan,
not getting better anytime soon.
They're right in relegation now.
Hopefully. I'd like to get this done in the next 6 minutes, but I've still got some questions to answer. So if we can get along, we're going to get one more question each. Right. This is a good question from Kyle for you. Who was next? I'll give this to Harry. This Kyle says, looking at the positive, what has been your highlight of the season so far? Could be a particular match, goal highlight, or a standout player taking their chance.
There's not been many highlights for me this season, if I'm honest. I've not enjoyed watching Arsenal play. I've not enjoyed the style. I've not enjoyed much, to be honest. I think the highlight for me, the player that's got me excited and got me off my seat, and aside from that, I'm not going to say the obvious, which is someone like Aubameyang, I've really, really enjoyed watching Gabriel Martinelli in the cup competitions and in the European competitions. I've really, really enjoyed his performances. He looks like your typical raw South American talent. He's hard working. He's really skillful, really intelligent footballer. I really, really like the look of him. And I'd like to see him get more game time, more opportunities. I think he's ready for what it's worth, more ready than someone like Bukayo Saka, for example. But I've really, really enjoyed his performances. And he's been, for me, the most exciting thing to watch in this Arsenal side at the minute.
I thought you might have said Callum Chambers showing Mesut Ozil how to get 3 assists in 1 game that he hasn't done in 2 seasons.
He's got a play to get assist, hasn't he?
Well, that's very true. Right, question for you, Sophie, from someone called Amanda. She says, when Sophie's on the Highbury Squad podcast, am I her favourite or is Kevin her favourite?
Hilarious. Well, as much as I love Amanda, I mean, you know, Super Kev, Super Kevin Campbell. If there was a burning building, I'd try and save them both at the same time. How about that?
Very political answer. Right, final question's going to go to Lana. John Gunner. If we don't make Champions League football next season, do you think Arsenal can keep Aubameyang and Lacazette? And more importantly, would they want to leave? That's a really good question. Don't try and get it done in less than a minute.
I think they would want to leave. I think especially Lacazette, because let's face it, it was his heart was set on Atletico Madrid from the start. Due to the transfer ban, it never happened. But I think Aubameyang will stay regardless.
Now that he's got that new deal.
Yeah, I have a feeling he'll want to retire. I'm not sure if Lacazette renewed his contract or not. But judging by, it will all come down to how they decide to, you know, strengthen their squad, who the next manager is. If, you know, he doesn't get, I think he should go regardless. There's a lot of factors playing in. So it's difficult to, you know, just give a straight answer because you have to look at it from all perspectives. I'm talking really fast now because you gave me a deadline. So
I need a wee. We got to go.
But, okay. Yeah. It's difficult to, you know, just say it. You have to look at all sides of, you know, is Emery staying? Do you get Champions League? If you don't, is he going to get sacked? Who are you going to bring in? Is it a temporary fix? Is it someone that the club sees as a long-term hire? There's a lot of questions that you have to ask in order to answer the first question, because, you know, it is a good question.
Okay, good. Right. I'm going to go and do the 5-4. I quickly get that done. And while I'm doing that, you lot can go and pick your, for the first time in quite a while, the ladies' nod and the gentleman's nod. So you go and find out who you want to pick, and I'll quickly read out the 5-4, and then we can all go for a wee. Right. This week's 5-4 question is named after our mate Andrew Fife, who come up with, we should ask the listeners a question every week and see what their answers are. So we've called it hashtag 5-4. The question is, I made this out of running out of ideas for this. Would Wenger be doing a better job with this squad than Emery is? Femstar, friend of the pod and Semi on here every now and then, says, nope, no chance. I love the man, but we can't forget how bad things were in the end. I think the fact he's taken a job since says a lot of what Asda thought. I should proofread these, shouldn't I? He was tired and needed to take time out, but Emery is not the one. Fool from something called the Gooners podcast, but no. He says Koscielny would be playing 3 games a week. We would have re-signed Theo Walcott and playing ahead of Lacazette. Xhaka would still be in every week at left back, and there are two more managers in football, you know, and there are more than two more managers in football, you know. And the final answer is Kyle, yes, and with a lesser squad. Oh dear, there you go. Right, we're now going to do ladies' nod. Sophie, who's your ladies' nod going to go to?
Okay, a ladies' nod will go out to all the ladies who love football, because hearing female voices always encourages me and I love it. And so shout out to all the women who talk football and love it. So there you go.
Jolly good. Lana, have you got one?
My shout out will go to the Kurdish female soldiers fighting to keep us safe at night.
Oh,
sorry
okay.
for making that political. I'm sorry.
Harry, have you got a gentleman's nod to anything or anyone?
Yeah, I'm going to give a nod to two mates, Kiri and Adam, who we travelled up to Sheffield together. Despite the game being absolute shit and the result being absolute shit, it being freezing cold, we had a good laugh on the way there and on the way back and everything, and we had a good night out as well. So yeah, shout out to those guys for making the trip bearable.
How do you deal with a 4-hour home journey after a shit game like that at 11 o'clock at night? How do you do that?
We stayed the night. We we stay tonight. Yeah.
So you just go to bed and cry. Yeah. And my gentleman's nod is going to go to Craig Revel Horwood of Strictly Come Dancing. He makes that show for me. He's absolutely brilliant. I love that show. Right. Thank you. We're going to end it now. Thank you very much to Sophie and your dog for joining us tonight, both your dogs. Thank you very much.
Thanks
to Lana.
And,
it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much to Lana and your dodgy internet.
Hey, my internet is perfect. Thank you very much.
No, we've got to blame something, haven't we? So have you enjoyed yourself?
Yes, blame IKEA. That's what everyone does.
And thank you very much to Harry. Well, oh, I forgot to ask about your podcast. Harry, thank you very much to you. And what's your podcast and where can I find you? And on Twitter if you want to.
Yeah, the podcast is Chronicles of a Gooner. You can find it on Twitter at Chronicles_AFC, or you can find me on Twitter at Harry and then my surname, SYMEOU. Thanks for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Excellent. Sophie, give a mention for your podcast and where you are on Twitters.
Yeah, we're at Highbury Squad. You can join Amanda, Gooner Girl 1969, and one, Kevin Campbell, and myself at Soccer Diva. And we don't always agree, and it makes for good content and conversation. Thank you for having me. Always appreciate you guys. You've always been very supportive, and I adore all of you.
Oh, cheers. Lana, do you want to tell people your Twitter, or do you want to keep it a secret in case anyone finds out where you are?
For some strange reason, they always find me. It's like I try to hide out, but... you can find me at Cocolito. It's after Toliso, if you didn't know.
Didn't know.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, everybody. This has been a Bird Count Wonderland. We have got it done in 1 hour, 34 minutes. And once we take out all the little bits of dodgy air for the iTunes version, this should be down to about 42 minutes. So thank you very much for joining us. We will be back on Thursday. So far, it's only me and Jason Davies because the rest of ABW have given up their love for podcasting and football. All they're working and have lives. I prefer to think it's the first one. It makes my life a lot easier. And thank you very much for joining us. And we will see you later. Goodbye.
As soon as I scored that goal, I was fucking livid. Splendid business.